Siren Radio.
Of course you are. You know, it's wonderful, these technological things which enable a slight sort of error to be immediately corrected with the sort of slightly panicked social media question, I don't have the weather, where's the weather gone, etc. Realising, of course, that one of our producers has actually sort of omitted this particular morning because we've been so busy with various other bits and pieces to actually send off the weather. We've put it right, so we can indeed, given her time to obviously sort of console herself, get herself together, get everything sort of formulated, etc., now say, Gabriella, it's time for that awesome moment.
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 21 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade, and it's a sunny day with a gentle breeze.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
You see, seamless really. Just sort of shows the behind-the-scenes sort of activities, a bit like a duckling waddling away, like the Midweek Drive vet sort of left us last night. Before we talk about some of the exciting things in the Gibraltar Chronicle, Gabriella, because you were in Vegas recently, weren't you, I believe?
I went last year.
Yeah, last year already. My word, 2018. Did you have any challenges with respect to food consumption and poorly tummies, etc.?
Oh, my God, yeah. No, I didn't have poorly tummies, but it was just too much food. I remember I ordered off what they called was the skinny menu, because at one point it was too much. Mm. And they gave me three tacos.
Their
skinny, and on their skinny menu. And it was like, the skinny menu was like, I think 700 calories, like minimum. And their salads were like over 1,000 calories. So I was like, I'm better off eating three soft-shell tacos than I am eating their salad full of bacon, chicken, and all the sauces that you could ever imagine.
Far be it for me to actually prevent the Daily Mail and the Daily Express from actually regularly running stories about the obesity crisis, but this doesn't help, does it, really? This does not help in terms of the kind of portion size and various other bits and pieces. And the line there, I presume, Rory, it wasn't a case of sort of the calorific consumption. Maybe it's just a case of they decided, okay, we're just going to make people really ill, because obviously Gabrielle had made the point last year, you come round and they're just going to be food poisoning.
I can't say, like, Las Vegas is honestly an experience that you have to be there to really kind of understand what it feels
like. You mean there's more than just the one taco stall?
Probably, Alex, probably. But no, it was my very first day on holiday, first meal there, still very jet-lagged, and about 4 hours later-ish, I was back in the hotel.
Saying, I want to die, I want to die. And making deep acquaintance, presumably, with the porcelain.
What did you eat?
To be honest, I really don't know, because I went to a breakfast buffet. And, of course, they had a wide variety of options, of which I tried the majority of. Because, you know, it's America. You don't get breakfast pizza anywhere else. But it literally could have been anything. And one thing caught me.
They might have just actually looked through your biometrics, seen you from Milton Keynes, and said, that's it, got a poison there.
Yeah.
Sorry, CIA, it can happen. Moving on, meet the Determined Special Olympics Gibraltar. Talk to us about the 34th Special Olympics Gibraltar National Games, which is running until tomorrow, actually, because it's already kicked off in the Victoria Stadium, I believe.
Yeah, it's on today. So they're doing a bunch of sports. I think they're doing bowling tomorrow. And we have a really good Special Olympics team who represent us at the, like, World Special Olympics. So they're just doing the Gibraltar National Games, and it's really good fun for them. And also they've been kind of advertised everywhere. They have become mini, like, celebrities in Gibraltar, because they're on the side of bus stops and things.
Wow.
Their pictures. So I'm sure they're having a great time today. I think it's already started by now. We're probably about to start.
Once your picture is on the side of a bus stop in Gibraltar, frankly, there's
You've made it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That is the pinnacle to which people can aspire in the global sphere. So, I mean, I doubt even if the President of the United States has actually had his image on a bus stop in Gibraltar.
I don't think he has.
No. And as far as our Prime Minister is concerned, well, it's no point even thinking about that. He wants to. But he's not going to. That's the important thing. And let's talk about this Cirque du Soleil.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you know, you've got lots of sunshine in Gibraltar, but clearly the tremendous energy that goes into Cirque du Soleil is exciting. What's happening with the Gibraltar government and Cirque du Soleil and the Gibraltar show? I mean, is this like the Great Yorkshire Show or the Lincolnshire Show, etc.? Is it something we should say, let's make our way for the Gibraltar show?
Yeah, well, they announced it yesterday that they're planning on a month worth of Cirque du Soleil in Gibraltar. Because I think apparently when these companies come over, they have to do quite a lot of shows because it's a lot of equipment and a lot of people that they need. Oh. So they don't come here. They won't come for just one show.
No.
So apparently we're in talks to bring them to bring the circus Cirque du Soleil for a whole month in 2020, in summer 2020.
Now, the only thing I would say about this, Gabrielle, it's a minor point, and I'll ask Gory, who is, of course, a journalism and creative writing second year now, heading into his second year, the Gibraltar Chronicle. I'm thinking, there we have the headline, Government in Discussions with Cirque du Soleil for Gibraltar Show. And that's not a very exciting photograph, is it? I mean, you know, you look at that, you've got three blokes, you know, dressed fairly casually, only one of them's actually wearing a tie. And
so
you just
got the chief minister there.
Uh-huh, yeah. Could he not have had some sparkles? Could he not have actually, you know, dressed up in some way, shape, or form? Could he not have had a trapeze artist sitting on his lap or something? You know, I mean, it could almost be discussions about, you know, some kind of, you know.
It could be Brexit discussions.
I was going to, yeah.
Exactly. It almost looks like a stock, almost like a stock image if you remove the flags.
Well, I mean, let's face it, our very own, the University of Lincoln, Stuart Wilde, would probably say that's not the most the strongest image you could actually use to kind of tell
you. Tightrope
walkers, anything.
Exactly. And he got all this excitement about Murray Sutherland, Senior Director of Business Development and Partnerships of the Cirque du Soleil Entertainment Group in Gibraltar, met with the Chief Minister, Fabien Picardo, and the Minister for Tourism, Gilbert Licoudi. And they're just three blokes sitting down, and I'm thinking, that doesn't excite me, Gabriella, you know? You're not going to say you were responsible for actually sort of putting that picture together, were you? No, please don't say that.
No, the picture was sent to us.
Maybe it's irony. Maybe these Cirque du Soleil people are actually deeply ironic. You know, they do Las Vegas. And they think, what Las Vegas misses, really? You know, three ordinary blokes sitting down having a chat on a sofa.
Yeah.
You know, that's what they actually need. Making it real.
We are going through election time as well, so I think probably that's why all these announcements are being made.
Yeah, but as I say, it's the visual image, really. I mean, you need the image to actually...
That's a really interesting thing to put on the back of your election. Oh, yeah, vote for me, because currently we're in talks with Cirque du Soleil, and we will bring Cirque du Soleil here next year.
It's promises and pie crust. It's the way that politicians have existed since the eons ago, and Pliny the Elder, and probably even Seneca, and many other Roman and Greek philosophers. Anyway, having sort of gone into that sort of phase, I just remind people it's 10:30 past 8 o'clock in England. In Gibraltar,
it's
10:30
past
9, exactly. So you've got to rush all the way to deal with Richard Fitzwilliam's take on Downton Abbey. I don't think he really liked it. I thought it was okay.
My mom went to watch that.
Yeah, well, I did too. And, I mean, overall, initially, I was a little bit unhappy. I thought, well, they expanded here, they padded it, lots of other things. But, you know, it's okay. It's a two-hour episode of the whole sort of series. I might get around to watching it one of these days. But anyway, great music. And Hustlers. So it's a nice little combination there, which Richard will be delivering for us. But meanwhile, Rory is going to prove that he's back with a vengeance. He's going to put those last two questions to you. Go, Rory.
So, Gabriella, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today on the show?
I have, thank you.
And will you be joining us again soon?
Hopefully next week.
Yay, exactly. Well, we'll also be joined, all being well, by the Director of Communications at the University of Lincoln. That, of course, is the wonderful Ellie Sample. I know, exactly. Very good.
And I really look forward to it.
Because you bonded, from that point of view.
Yeah, we have. I look forward to speaking to her. Then again, I'll definitely do next week. Well, I was going to do it anyway.
It's all wondrous after fashion. Yeah. You see, that Rory is the consummate professional of a girl who could actually sort of say, where's the weather? And we can sort it out within seconds. Marvellous, you know, it's genius stuff.
Truly amazing.
Yes. So I took myself off to see Downton Abbey, the movie, and I'm thinking to myself, but surely, surely Jean Marsh must be sort of thinking, but this is simply Upstairs Downstairs, repackaged by Mr. Fellows, and you've got Mrs. Bridges' character, you've got Hudson the butler, you've got the upstairs, obviously, in the routines, you've even got a visit of the monarchy. Strangely enough, of course, the revisionist history treatment that's given to a thing which we cannot talk about, shh, but it involves a potential assassination. I don't know whether it works. I'm thinking, it was all right. Initially I was thinking, what is this saying about England in particular staggering backwards into the future, looking longingly at the past? That makes not one iota of difference, Rory, because Richard Fitzwilliams is going to give us his views on that awesome, wonderful tribute to the class system, Hustlers, if you happen to be a striptease artist somewhere else. No, of course I'm talking about the Abbey itself, Downton Abbey. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm very well. Looking forward to going to Rome tomorrow. So I should be talking about that next week. But as you say, Downton Abbey, well, it's back. And
Did it ever go away?
It didn't really go away, probably, no. And, I mean, you're absolutely right, by the way, to draw the parallel between this movie and...
Rory's far too young to remember Upstairs Downstairs. It's available in all sorts of wonderful
I have stores. Heard of it, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I just thought that was so much, you know, 1970s, but it addressed all these things, and even that I'm sure there was a royal visit to Upstairs Downstairs in one of the
episodes. There was, its guest of honour. In fact, in my review online, I know you follow Movies One and read my...
It's an essential part of the week, you know, that and the Chilpack Hollywood Hour, you know, two essential downloadable podcasts.
Well, you're quite right, and I mean, Downton has copied the Guest of Honour episode, which is where King Edward VII came to dinner. Now, what we have here is chaos at Downton, because on their visit to Yorkshire... We have George V, played by Simon Jones, and Queen Mary, played by Geraldine James, who are spending a night with guest of Lord and Lady Grantham, played by Hugh Bonneville and Elizabeth McGovern. Drama galore indeed. The estate of Downton, Highclere Castle, is where it's filmed. It's now run by Lady Mary, played by Michelle Dockery, whose husband is the dashing Henry Talbot, Matthew Good. I would say this, if you enjoyed it on the small screen, you will probably have a lot of fun here, because this is really an extension of the television series. It follows where the last series, there were six parts, 52 episodes, I think, leaves off, and... if for any reason you were resistant to it when it was on television, you would not be wise to catch this, because firstly, you won't know the background, and secondly, I mean, the trailer has been widely mocked because so many people genuflect all the time. I haven't seen so much bowing in a very, very, very long time. I did feel I'd have a little bit of a lump of my throat at the end of it, because I did enjoy, on the whole, a lot of the series. I did follow it. I have known Julian Fellowes many years. He's a mercurial, and Downton led to Mary Poppins, Half a Sixpence, and a whole load of other creations. There are scenes in this which are very unconvincing. There is the attempted assassination of George V by an Irish anarchist. I don't think it's a particular spoiler, because the amount of tension that particular scene generates is nil. There is a gay club in the local village, and I have to say it's probably the liveliest spot.
You see, Richard, you mentioned that. I think, well, if they're going to go down that route, why don't we actually have some Asian actors in there? Why don't we actually have some African actors in there? Why couldn't we have Idris Elba as King George? You know, go the whole hog if you're going to sort of play around with that. Although I have to say, Richard, the key to absolutely appreciating the whole thing is watch the trailer with Spanish subtitles. That is very amusing.
Now that is a really, really cruel crack. I mean, I can imagine that would be
that's a rubble.
No, whoever put the trailer together, I mean, the trailer is bizarre. It's become something of a cause célèbre, actually. And it really has. I would, just to mention the rest of the plot, a lot of it involves the fact the royal household servants serve the monarch and Well, if Downton staff thought they'd be getting a look in, they'd be wrong. So how do the staff retaliate, and what happens? And quite honestly, I mean, this bit is out of a Michael
They would have been
class.
Sacked. They would have been sacked, let's face it. If you actually have the word butler, you lock him away. No spoilers, obviously.
I mean, it's that part of it is just nonsense. I mean, they lock him away and drug him and whatever.
Preposterous. Preposterous is the word you're looking for, Richard.
And as though Carson, played by Jim Carter. Mm. I mean, can you imagine Hudson out of upstairs, downstairs, approving that sort of thing?
I think he would have left immediately and become head of CI5 in the professionals. That's what he would have done.
Well, I think he may very, very well have. But just to make a few comments about what is amusing, I mean, you've got the visual side of it. You've got spectacular scenes at dinner and ballroom. I imagine we've seen many, many spectacular dinners and ballrooms in other films, in other series. But yes, you've got the verbal duels between Maggie Smith's Dowager Countess of Grantham and Penelope Wilson's Lady Merton, and also the Dowager Countess targets a lady of the household who's visiting, Imelda Staunton's Lady Bagshaw, with whom she has a feud. And some of the lines are rather fun, as you can imagine. Maggie Smith is very, very good. So there's a certain amount of magic, but it's not realistic, it's not particularly well written, and it's unashamed escapism. It is easy to mock, and there's no subtlety, there's little realism, it's classy soap, and as I say, it's rather like an extended television.
Perhaps
episode.
A Christmas special in the autumn? You know,
yes, absolutely.
However, Rory, are you a Downton fan? I mean, it goes down well in the States. I mean, they go crazy over Downton Abbey.
I was about to say, Alex, over here, I've not seen that many adverts, at least in the physical realm, for this movie at all. Mm. But you go over to the States.
It is phenomenal.
It is literally everywhere.
Academy Award.
On trams, on bus stops, on... Anywhere you go,
you cannot breathe in America.
The Downton Abbey movie trailer, or there's some poster, is there.
You see, Richard, that's it. It's conquered America.
That's crazy. I mean, I suppose it kind of fulfills the belief that all Americans have that every single British person is just a monocle wearing, top hat wearing, you know, gentleman.
It's very true.
There's absolutely no doubt it's worldwide appeal. It's not just the States. I mean, Downton has been phenomenal, just as, well, I mean, now we had Brideshead revisited Julian the Crab. This is a different level, of course.
Yeah, Brideshead was never quite in this league, Richard. I mean,
No, but I was just mentioning, I was just referring to series from Britain having enormous appeals abroad. No, I wasn't making a comparison between the two. But there's no question that though keeping it going was, as I remember, tricky at times. I mean, Fellows did a very good job of enlivening weeks with, as I say, a very classy soap. But if you make a film of it, I think you would normally expect something more. What it is playing totally safe, but it will bring a lot of pleasure. Remember when I review Marvel movies, I try and do it from the point of view of the fans. Here, there are millions and millions of fans, and they will love it.
Exactly. There were an awful lot of people in the cinema when I went to go and see it. And as I say, I thought it was okay-ish, and best not think too much about the other messages that are being put through with that. And look forward to Ad Astra, which I'm certainly looking forward to checking out. Or indeed, even the Reese Witherspoon starring Judy. That's another thing.
I have to tell you that I tried to get into Ad Astra yesterday.
Yes.
Yes, and I had an interesting experience at the cinema world in Leicester Square.
Did they not know who you were, Richard?
Well, the only performance, I targeted a performance which was advertised as standard. Mm-hmm. Apparently, when I went in, my chair would have been rocked, water would have been...
Yes.
Say, no, but I'm not experiencing that.
You don't want to go for that interactivity? Lord.
No, I'm sorry, but no, I mean, I will... I would have a more peaceful look at it.
Perhaps if we're talking about interactivity, maybe that kind of technique could be introduced into Hustlers with a crew of savvy former strip club employees.
Because, Yes, yes. The Hustlers is a movie that really does swing. I mean, it's how the strippers down in their luck get their revenge on their clients, especially if those clients are from Wall Street, and it's the fault of the clients and their speculation that has caused a financial crash, which means that, well, they are going to regret what they do in the strip clubs. Originally, we meet, I mean, the cast here is very good. The visuals are marvelous, and with the neon lights, it shows a seductive allure of sleaze. The thing is, when reality catches
up... Sounds like a night at Quacks to me, but never mind.
Well, I mean, no. What you're going to get is J-Lo on top form. She plays Ramona, and when Ramona appears on the stage in this club, the whole thing is covered with dollar bills. I mean, it's unforgettable, and, well, you learn from someone like that, a real pro, because Dorothy, played by Constance Wu, who becomes a stripper to support her family, Ramona takes her under her wing, and we see this in flashback because we see Dorothy talking to the journalist Elizabeth, played by Julia Stiles. Obviously, we know things have gone wrong. She narrates in flashback, and we discover what happens. Originally, the strippers, and there's Mercedes, played by Kiki Palmer, and Annabelle, played by Liddy Reinhardt, they do extremely well, and you've got several types of clients, the insecure ones, you've got the regulars, and then you've got the hedge fund managers. You can get tens of thousands of them in a night, and they're pretty good at it. But when everything dries up after the ghastly crash, well, what should the girls do? What they do is...
go to university and get an education, clearly.
I don't think so.
No? Okay.
I think, haven't you thought of targeting rich men at bars, getting them drunk, drugging them, and then taking them to the club, and then stealing their card numbers and charging them? If that happens, would you admit it to your wealthy colleagues and your firm how you lost the money onto the police? I mean, this wouldn't do, would it? So
they're actually hustling. They're hustling.
Yeah,
that's the title.
They are most certainly doing that, and also it takes off. Firstly, they take them to the club. Secondly, when they want to give the club a cut of the proceeds, they use hotels and they use private homes, and they expand. You're noting dangers here because there are then more girls and some of them are unreliable and so forth. Things are going to go wrong eventually. But my goodness me, what a lot of fun we have on the way. I have a very callous side, it seems, because I was laughing at a lot of some cruel scenes.
It sounds like an ideal antidote to Downton Abbey, though, Richard. I mean,
No, it is. But what I must emphasise is that, firstly, we remember Constance Wu from Crazy Rich Asians. Mm. I mean, she really is excellent. But J-Lo, my goodness, as Ramona. I mean, it's been considered the best performance. She's absolutely first class. But what is so good to see is this is a movie, a couple of hours, it's well edited, it's fast moving, and it's got a good script. So you've got these characters who are totally believable. You've got situations that may be a bit outrageous, but they're very, very funny, even if they're rather cruel. And, you know, the New York City locations, the garish, lurid nightclub scenes, and then the way that this is taken further and what happens, and also the narration on the way they look back. I mean, all of this works a treat. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Well, there we are.
And it's, incidentally, a woman director. We must welcome Lorraine Scafana. I've not heard of her, but I hope I see a film, another film that she makes soon.
Rory, would you be seeing Hustlers?
I think it sounds very different to anything that I've seen recently. And on that basis, especially if the actors in it, Richard, are as good as they say you are, I think I may well be interested in it.
Indeed, as Richard sort of says that they are. Amazing. And what about Downton Abbey?
I haven't seen the show.
I've got a box set of Downton Abbey. I've so far only watched 15 minutes of it. So you don't have to see the show to appreciate the movie.
I would make the point that if you haven't seen the television series, you might have quite a lot of problems.
No,
working
Richard.
Out who's,
honestly,
you don't think so?
No, I can go there and say, okay. You, actually, to be fair, you don't have to. I like Marvel movies, you can pretty much identify what's what. If you've seen Upstairs, Downstairs, that helps, but that was a long time ago.
Well, if you have a nostalgic wallow, if you feel like it.
Exactly, exactly. Okay, moving on, Ian Lennox, then Caroline Ray, the chief vet of Blue Cross, then Susie Dent. It's just so much to fit into the programme. Rory, last two questions for Richard, please.
Okay, Richard, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I certainly have.
And hopefully you'll be joining us next week.
After I get back from Rome, I would be delighted.
Arrivederci, Richard.
With stories from Italy.
Signor Fitzwilliams. Or as Jason Aldean might say, him back. Where's a guy in a steel toes covered in dirt? Just a rock and roll t-shirt, headed to work with a pack of Red Man in his pocket. He's kind of Red Man, but he's rocking. Wears a beat-up telly and a Marshall stack. Little Marshall Tucker and a six-pack. Wears a good old boys and a good old day. Straight up, getting sideways. We back, we back, we back in the speakers. Back in black, getting blasted in the bleachers. It's probably true what my mama said. I do it just like my daddy did. We back, we back, we back in the saddle. Back on stage, making the whole place rattle. Back with the 18 train on the track. Thought we were gone, but you're wrong. Now it's on, we back. Where's the chick wearing blue jeans? A little too tight. Got a grip on a koozie if it's what she likes. Getting picked up and I'm picked up and kicking it with guys like us. We back, we back, we back in the speakers. Back in black, getting blasted in the bleachers. It's probably true what my mama said. I do it just like my daddy did. We back, we back, we back in the saddle. Back on stage, making the whole place rattle. Back with the 18 train on the track. Thought we were gone, but you're wrong. That was on. Up and sun goes down, yeah, everything good comes back around. We back, we back in the speakers. Back in black, getting blasted in the bleachers. It's probably true what my mama said. I do it just like my daddy did. We back. We back in the saddle, back on stage, making the whole place rattle. Back with the 18 train on the track. Thought we were gone, but you're wrong. Now it's on. We back. Thought we were gone, but you're wrong. Now it's on. We back. We back. We back. We back in the saddle, back on stage, making the whole. We back, she back, he back. Hopefully Ian Lennox is back. Are you back, Ian Lennox?
Nearly.
Yeah, no, very good. That was
just
actually
off my breakfast.
I know, it's so much pace here. You've got to look after people coming in, going, and all the rest of the bits and pieces. That was Tessa's Tune of the Week. You might have heard a good chunk of it there. Jason Aldean and We Back. What is the Ian Lennox view on it, please?
Well, I quite like it, yes.
Another Tessa.
Don't need to go any more detail than that.
No, I think that's fine. That's probably all right. Tessa has already given me next week's Tune of the Week because she's given me a holiday. I know, strange. But there
Tessa
we are.
Takes holidays?
Yeah. Exactly. It's very sloppy. Very, very sloppy. You know? I mean, it's, but anyway. However, Rory McGowan is in the studio, and rather like myself, we appreciated that once Olympiacos actually got two goals back against Tottenham, there was no chance Emma Street would come in as they threw away a 2-0 lead and drew 2-2.
It's been some pretty strange games going on, hasn't it?
Very strange. Well, tell me about it.
Yola did all right, mate, didn't they?
We had to redress the balance after the fiasco of the Canaries and the equal fiasco.
Yes, I saw that. Was De Bruyne playing in that game?
Yes.
Alex? Was De Bruyne playing in that
against
game?
Against Norwich? I'm not sure, actually. I'd have to double check.
I saw him in the...
He was certainly in the game last night, exactly.
Oh, yeah. I just love watching him play. It's like watching some chess master come on the pitch.
Martin Keown describes him as a grand painter, basically, like brushstrokes. He has brushstrokes.
Okay. It's the same sort of thing, isn't it, really? Yeah.
But I still have a bone to pick with your good self, Ian, because the bottom line is, what happened to Newcastle? I mean, you were leading against Liverpool. Why didn't you go on and sort of do that business? I mean, for goodness sake.
Tactical error. Yeah. Tactical error. Yeah. We scored too early and got them annoyed.
Yeah. And, of course, next week, one of the reasons that Ben Lewis is coming back telephonically.
Yes, I know. It's Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah. It is Saturday. Ben's Brighton take on board the might of Steve Bruce and Ian Lennox's Newcastle United.
Yes, I think we've got Andy Carroll back for that game, so there might be some might involved.
A siren radio match to remember.
It is going to be very exciting, because that's the sort of classic thing. Of course, it's, I think, Graham Potter's Brighton, if you're looking at managers these days, so who's there. But the other thing, of course, is, are you going to be getting up early for the Rugby World Cup, Ian?
No, I'll record it and watch it in a civilised hour. I watch it as live, as they say.
Will that go down well with Arthur McKenzie? I mean, here was I having images of you both sort of settling down at 20th September to see Japan versus Russia, and then, of course, Sunday, Ireland versus Scotland. I mean, the excitement is... Are you a rugby fan, Roy?
I kind of consume it passively.
So Sunday, 22nd of September, fan. England play Tonga in Sapporo. 11:15 a.m.
I've got to be honest, and this is probably me just being naive here, I didn't know Japan played rugby.
Wow.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Are they any good at it?
Yeah. They lack size, as you might expect, but they're getting bigger. Mm-hmm. They occasionally get some Japanese people, 6'7" or something like that. Yes, they appear very fiercely, as you might expect. And briefly, the last World Cup, They started to play really well. They got beaten in the end, but they surprised a few people. They may have gone back again. When you're emerging like they are, it often depends on suddenly finding some startlingly good players, two or three, and once they go on the way and there's no one replacing them, you know? So there's a fluctuation goes on. Italy are a bit like that. Argentina were.
And of course, they play Scotland on the 13th of October. That's Sunday, the 13th of October. Also in their group, of course, Samoa, Russia, and Ireland, of course. Japan playing Ireland on the 28th of September. So who knows what could actually happen. Ireland, I think, might not be as successful as perhaps they hope to be.
Samoa, I think, are a terrific seven-a-side team, aren't they?
Yeah, well, exactly.
They seem to throw, they've got huge people and they run very quickly and they throw the ball about all over the place. But they're not the best disciplined of sides, I don't think.
It's very exciting. Yeah. Not sure whether England will win. I suspect New Zealand might be out there. Let's hope it's not Australia. But in fact, I'd quite like to see Namibia do well, just because I think it's crazy. You know, Namibia playing Italy in the Pool B, as it's referred
to. Well, my money's on Lilliput. Never mind.
Yeah, okay. Honestly,
that went down well.
Ian, if you didn't say you'd take your role as Siren's Northeast sports reporter seriously, we'd sort of do it. Rory, did you follow the cricket, by the way?
I did not. Sorry. I'm at. Usually I have people to bounce off of me.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. Just let it go.
Unfortunately.
That's important. Because, as Ian will say, 2-2 was a fair result, but it did mean that Australia kept the Ashes, or retained the Ashes, so we say, after a 2-2.
I think they probably are a better side than me. That's just. They've got the best batsman in the world, the best fast bowler, the best bowling attack, and the best finger spinner. But we had Ben Stokes.
Ben, of course, has been very annoyed with some of the tabloid press recently with respect to...
Well, I don't blame him either.
Yeah.
I've heard
it's very true.
Carry
on.
I was just going to say, I found out exactly what he's complaining about. I think it's absolutely disgraceful.
Very true. So, what's your prediction then, Ian, for the opening game of the Rugby World Cup? We'll just see what you're going. I mean, we don't want scores because that'd be ridiculous with rugby. It could be all over the place, but, you know.
Who's playing who?
Yeah, Japan against Russia.
Oh, Japan, I think.
Japan, okay. Rory, would like to hazard. What are you going to say? Japan versus Russia.
Given that you were talking that Japan was kind of emerging, I think I'm also going to go Japan.
Yeah, and I will also go for Japan. So there we are, first week round. One particular choice, we'll work through that. We'll build that.
I must admit, I haven't a clue how good Russia are. I haven't seen them play ever.
Yeah, nobody does. They keep it very secret, you know. But that Prime Minister Putin, I'm sure he'll be working them out. He'll have got them sort of sorted out from that point of view. You don't want to have an embarrassment. You don't want those Russian bears going up against those teeny tiny Japanese people, effectively, and sort of wondering, hi, 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 and so on. Life continues. This is what comes of actually getting the majority of your experience of Japan through movies relating to You Only Live Twice, James Bond, and, of course, various other Shogun Warriors, so it goes. And I know Keith Tainton would be very annoyed about that because he spent a whole year, 2 years actually living in Japan and married a wonderful Japanese lady. So, life continues. Enough of such rambling. I know you've got to say farewell to your lodger, Ian. So, Rory's going to ask you those last two questions. Off you go, Rory.
So, Ian, have you had a reasonably interesting telephone link with us today?
Yes, I have. Thank you very much. It's short because, as I explained to Alex, I've got to go and greet say goodbye to somebody.
Oh, well, will you be joining us again soon, then?
It's not going to be a long goodbye. I mean, it's not like a
next
kind
week.
Of... Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, as we said, if it was a long goodbye, it's like 7 days, etc. He's being polite, you know. I mean, Ian...
The long goodbye, eh? Yes. Is that Chandler or was
Yeah,
that?
Absolutely. It was a grey metal day sky.
He was what genre of writer was he? I can't remember now.
I would have said, in a sense, hard-boiled detective genre.
That's it, yeah, the hard-boiled school.
Hard-boiled school, exactly. Like eggs and detectives, clearly the way forward as far as that's concerned. And as we've already...
Any more of that, I should be putting in for a rise.
Exactly. So you should. We'll be cheering on Japan and, of course, England and a variety of other things in the Rugby World Cup. Meanwhile...
Dickinson. You're listening to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition on Siren Radio, with the time coming up to 17 minutes to 9 o'clock. And up next, we'll be speaking to wonderful vet individual Caroline Ray, who will be talking about how many people are actually pointlessly putting their pets to sleep, which is dreadful. So a little feature there with Caroline to talk us through a variety of other bits and pieces. And to take us around to that, well, let's just have a little trip to suburbia. For many of us, our pets are an integral part of the family. They're loved, they're cherished just as much as our nearest and dearest. However, taking care of them can be expensive, especially if they're suddenly taken seriously ill. Usual upkeep isn't cheap in any case. But is that any reason why pets should be put to sleep? I don't think so, and let's talk a little bit more about this very sad story with the head of veterinary services at Blue Cross, the wonderful Caroline Ray. How are you, Caroline?
Good morning. Yeah, yes, I'm very good, actually. Lovely sunny day down in London. I hope it's lovely sunny up in Lincolnshire as well.
Of course it is, Caroline, because you've joined us on air. You brought your sunshine with us, which is wonderful.
Now, I'll do my best.
On the other side, though, 93 pet owners, basically, those surveyed, 7% of surveyed, have actually had to put their pets to sleep because they couldn't afford the bills. That's really a tragedy, really. I mean, just because you couldn't afford the bills, putting your pets to sleep and saying that's it. I mean, Rory's shocked in the studio, I think it's fair to say.
I mean, yeah. There seems to be something other wrong. Alternatives.
Yeah, exactly.
Surely,
you know,
than to just...
You're a bit poorly, we'll put you down. You were ill with food poisoning in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's
couldn't
it.
Afford treatment. That's
John,
it. Rory's got to go. Caroline, why is this the case? And is it just a case of, you know, these are the challenging times in which we live?
Well, we're very lucky, aren't we, in this country, in that we have the NHS to take care of people.
Mm.
But of course, there is no equivalent service for animals. And the problem is, I think, that people are shocked and unprepared for veterinary costs. I mean, obviously, you know, as vets, we all have a vocation to take care of animals. And I think for many vets, it's a big struggle, the fact of getting used to the fact that in addition to taking care of the pet, you also have to look after the animal and run a business. That is the problem. But there is, as I said, there's no NHS. And I think, you know, for many people, veterinary bills can be a massive shock because we just don't realise how much healthcare can cost. Mm. You know, I mean, we know that, you know, in addition to the 7% of pet owners who have pets put to sleep simply because they couldn't afford the bill, we've also got a survey showing that more than a third have had to borrow money to cover veterinary care costs. You know, and for people on a low income, that can be a real nightmare. It's very difficult to get a favourable loan. And so, therefore, you know, it can be something that really, really disadvantages them financially for a long period.
Well, we have our very own student vet, of course, who will be graduating from the Royal Veterinary College later on this year. That's Zoe Jameson. She specialises in horses, but that's an even greater range of customer. Caroline, is the solution make sure that if you're going to get a pet, obviously it's a responsible thing, you need to be well aware of that, but whether it's a cat or a dog or even a hamster perhaps, you need to ensure that it's properly insured?
Yes, I mean, insurance is certainly a great idea. Obviously, people need to read the small print very carefully. I mean, sometimes you find that as your pet ages, the premiums will go up. You know, and sometimes you find that conditions can be excluded as your pet goes through its lifetime. And, of course, your circumstances can change fantastically through the life because, I mean, many pets will live for 12 years or longer. And at Blue Cross, we often come across people who have been quite well off at the start of their careers and when they originally got their pets. But then maybe something happens, you know, sorts of things that can happen to anybody. Maybe you get a long-term illness and so you can't continue working, or your partner or your child gets a long-term illness. We have a lot of people who are carers, you know, regularly coming into our hospitals. You know, and it's a real struggle. But equally well, knowing what we know about the physical and mental benefits of pet ownership, it's not surprising that their pets are really, really important to them. If you're lucky enough to live in one of our hospital catchment areas, and I think we have a hospital up near you in Grimsby, then you can, if you're on benefits, then you may be able to access our hospital care. And we have also just launched a new service. We're really excited. We've teamed up with an organisation called Paw Squad that can offer veterinary advice given by fully qualified veterinary surgeons over the phone or over the internet, so that you can have a look at your pet via a camera link or alternatively via photographs and advise you whether you actually need to go to the vet in the first place. You know, we're up for anything that can help pet owners to save money.
And that certainly ties in with the notion of using technology, a bit like NHS Direct and other aspects within that. And perhaps, actually, given it's a video link, maybe a little bit less stressful for the animals as well? They're not actually taken to PDSA or to the RSPCA or to their vets?
Or even to the Blue Cross in Grimsby.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah. Yes, I mean, certainly that is one of the major benefits, because obviously it can be very difficult to examine an animal in a consulting room if it's terrified. Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's not all about veterinary care, because, I mean, there are other things that you can do to keep, you know, manage your pet on a budget. And we've got lots of advice on the Blue Cross website. If you just go to the Blue Cross website and look for the budget term, you know, there are things like, for example, keeping your pet slim. That will help to reduce a lot of your veterinary costs. Making sure that they get their vaccinations regularly, which means every year. And also things like stress reduction, you know, toys and things like that. I mean, we know that owners love to spoil their pets, but actually you don't need to spend a lot of money to do that. I mean, we've got a couple of things on our website, again, about making low-cost toys out of toilet rolls and pizza boxes and stuff like that. And they can really let animals play, and it's a stress reducer and therefore keeps them not only happier but also healthier. And
now,
so we'd really recommend that.
Allowing for that, let's turn to Rory. Rory, you've been listening to that. It sounds as though Caroline's got a really good solution there with respect to Blue Cross in particular. Any thoughts or questions? Because if memory serves, you have a dog, is that right?
I do not.
You don't?
I do not own... I am not a
pet owner.
Pet owner.
Okay.
But no. But from the sounds of it, the Blue Cross is doing an amazing job in this partnership. So tell me then, Caroline... You've teamed up with these veterinary surgeons.
Paw Squad. It's
Paw
lovely.
Squad.
I mean, it's great.
It is a lovely name. So how kind of difficult has it been to kind of create this partnership and to sort out this kind of... Because this is, assumingly, quite a big kind of project to have proper veterinary... You know, surgeons teaming up, and you know, you've got to get a whole bunch of them.
Is it something, Caroline, which you just woke up one day and said, "We have to do this. This has to be done," or is it a case of, "Oh, what the hey?"
Yeah.
I think, you know, well, in every industry in the world, we're all very aware of how digital is changing, you know, digital opportunities are changing the face of almost every industry, aren't we? I mean, look at Amazon, and as you say, even the NHS now has an app where you can access a doctor online. Mm. So we're very aware of that, and there are a number of companies that are already running services for pet owners, you know, as a commercial venture, and indeed Paw Squad run theirs as a commercial venture, but they have kindly agreed to give Blue Cross clients a discounted service so that people on benefits can access that service as well. And as so much of our work as vets and probably as doctors as well is dealing with the worried well, then that's really where a consultation with Paw Squad can really pay benefits, because of the fact that, you know, you can save yourself some money by talking to somebody online rather than physically going into a vet's, where, you know, a consultation is likely to be rather more expensive. You know, for people on benefits, they can access this service for only £12 a year. You know, that's a very, very reasonable sum.
Absolutely. Just remind folk, Caroline, if you may, of the best places to actually go to find Blue Cross online and, of course, Paw Squad as well.
If you have a look at our website, that's bluecross.org.uk. There is loads of information about general pet care there. And again, you know, as we say, general pet care is so important in keeping your pet healthy. And there's also a link to pet care on a budget. And you can have and that will lead you to the Paw Squad information as well. Or you can just Google Paw Squad and Blue Cross.
It's wonderful. 21st century technology helping our best friends and furry animal friends stay safe as well, which is great. Caroline Ray, Head of Veterinary Services at Blue Cross. Many thanks indeed.
Thank you very much. Hello, sunshine. Coming to my life. Hello, sunshine. Coming to my life. In honesty. I'm a minute. You're a minute too. So come on, minute. I want to live with you. In honesty.
I suspect Rory McGowan may not actually know the band who has just been singing Hello Sunshine. Any thoughts, Rory?
I don't know them.
You don't?
No. No, I don't, Alex.
Well, you see, you think about what we were just talking about with, of course, Blue Cross and the Head of Veterinary Services. What better than Hello Sunshine? With the super furry animals. Sometimes, you know, I don't like to make it explicit, but the programme is constructed to actually sort of fit into place from that point of view. It may well be on another radio station, John Humphrey's last day. Sorry, John, but, you know, at the end of the day, you know, the Midweek Drive Morning Edition relentlessly works through this. This is why Chris Evans left Radio 2, you know, and I'm sure, you know, at this stage we have to just keep battling through on that basis. Anyway,
you do indeed.
We give you Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday and Friday to do the rest of the stuff, etc. So I think for the Thursday 8 through 10 slot, it's all worthwhile. Don't forget, this evening at 7 o'clock, we've got part one of the 50th anniversary, Nick Elliott, Sound and Nick's Vision. I say 50th anniversary, it's episode 50, volume 50. And it's also Sue Royce's last appearance with Nick Elliott and lots of things there. That's part one. So big a show, Rory, that it's split over two consecutive Thursdays. Part one this week, part two next week.
Oh, the suspense. Yeah, the other week.
I think so. It's very good. And up next, after the news, we pretty much will be speaking to Dave Kent, maybe Susie Dent, we don't know. We'd be at a loss for words. Apparently more than half of British folk believe their vocabulary is limited by modern communication. Well, hashtag sad face. Today, highs of 21 degrees centigrade, lows of 9 degrees centigrade. It's going to be a sunny day with a gentle breeze. Yay! Smiley face. Or is that just because we're at a loss for words? Well, allowing for the fact that 2 in 3 people in the East Midlands use emojis, GIFs and memes rather than words to communicate, does it mean the beginning of the end for our traditional way of using language to connect in all sorts of ways? Two people who are guaranteed to actually provide a solution to this are the awesome twosome. First of all, Susie Dent, Countdown star extraordinaire, language expert. Susie, welcome to the programme. How are you? Oh, Susie doesn't seem to be there. Can you actually hear us, Susie Dent? No, absolute silence. Slight sort of noise coming through on that basis. Do we actually have Dave Kent there?
Certainly.
Oh,
good morning.
Hurrah. Yay. Relief and relax and all sorts of other. Dave Kent, Guide Dogs Engagement Officer. We weren't sure what it was going to be. Kent and Dent, Dent and Kent, etc. We gathered the running lates, etc. But Dave, good to speak to you on the programme and delighted that you weren't putting on a fake accent to say, yes, I'm going to impersonate Susie Dent on this one, which is good.
I don't think I'd be very good at that, really.
Yeah, I don't know, Dave. For a moment there, I almost got chills. Listen, Dave, we are talking about this research from the study Powers of Description, which was released by the charity Guide Dogs, which suggests that 2 in 3 Britons think that their vocabulary has been affected by modern communication methods and things like LOL, BRB, Be Right Back, OMG, all those sort of things are kind of pretty much to blame. I mean, what are your thoughts when you saw this particular survey and study? Is it a case of, yeah, this is what we expected, this is what is basically leading to the kind of politicians we've got representing us?
Doesn't really surprise me. Talking to my contemporaries, we see it as more and more of a challenge that language is being reduced into these 3-4-letter combinations that really do impoverish us. But what really surprised me about the survey was the quarter of people surveyed who didn't think that it was important to expand their vocabulary. And that, I think that leaves me a bit shivery.
Indeed. I mean, not that we're going to put questions to you such as consider the role of existential psychoanalysis in the world today, but at the same time, it does mean that somehow our language and the richness and the wonderful range of words that we've actually got is beginning, it's reducing. In fact, in many ways, you could argue, are we not going back to the ancient Sumerians and making clay signs on tablets?
Absolutely. It is becoming more pictorial. Language is becoming more pictorial in the sense of in the use of emojis. But as a blind person, as a totally blind person, and I see nothing at all, I'm non-perceptive of light, as they say. So language to me is paramount, language that I use and language that people speak to me, and how that can enhance my experience and how that can really colour my world. The more colourful, the more descriptive the language, the kind of the more enthralled and engaged I am.
Now, in particular, I was fascinated by the findings that less than half of British folk surveyed said that they would feel confident describing even things like a television show, giving directions, well, that's what sat-nav's for, surely, a situation, objects, persons, etc. Now, if somebody's visually impaired, clearly, if you are expecting to have some kind of description from that point of view, it's not going to be a satisfying experience, really. Somebody's saying, well, smiley face. It's emoticons don't really work, presumably, on that instance.
No, they don't really. I mean, so it's... what's one of the ones I've seen? Smiling face with squinting eyes.
Hmm.
Okay, well, that's a nice cartoony picture. Doesn't really tell me an awful lot about what else people are saying, especially if they're going, you know, LOL, ROFL, OMG, and the rest of that kind of stuff. It's, like I say, that I find that so reductive and uninclusive.
We have in the studio, Dave, a fabulous student who's reading a joint degree with journalism and creative writing. So clearly words at the heart of that. Rory, you've been listening to what Dave's had to say with respect to that. What thoughts or questions have you got about this whole thing?
Right. I'm going to try my best to not sound like the resident young person on the show.
but he is, Dave, because we feel we have to sort of fulfil that brief, you know, resident young
you
person.
Your
tick.
Words.
Exactly.
So I think it's important to acknowledge, first of all, that language evolves. The stuff that we were using in the 18th century, new words are going to come around all the time. Language is going to move on. Some things are going to fall out of fashion. Some things are going to fall into it. And I think as kind of part of the new age of talking to people much more via, you know, written word, thanks to social media, that in this part of history, it seems like emoticons are taking off. Now, is it still important to improve your vocabulary, which apparently over a third of people don't think it is? Of course it is. Learning new things, you know, reading books is still as important as it's ever been. But I think there is a place for emoticons or emojis in, you know, present society. Just so long as you don't speak entirely in them, you know, I think you'll be quite
all right.
I
totally agree. Totally agree, because they are so exclusive, and they are kind of, they will alienate blind people. All you'll get is the, you know, you'll get the description, if you're lucky, of the emoji, but that's all you'll get. Whereas, you know, a paragraph of words or a sentence or two, three sentences can be, you know, that's the difference. And I'm not dinosauric. I think language, of course, language evolves. But when it when language becomes excluding of a particular group, a social group, then I worry a little bit.
No, and I agree. Context matters. And sometimes when you have to explain emoji to someone in particular, that can be quite difficult to get across that kind of context in which it's being used.
I think it's a case of getting the balance right between shorthand and appreciating things where we can communicate, because at the end of the day, if we can't communicate, well, we're not doing our job, are we, really? Problem. Never mind. Hopefully we solved it. Dave, where can people go? Is there a place that you recommend people should actually go to find out more details about this hashtag powers of description survey released by the Guide Dogs charity?
Yes, please, 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 please visit our website at guidedogs.org.uk. That's guidedogs.org.uk. And there you will find a wealth of information about this and our other services and volunteering opportunities where you can explore, for example, and this is in context, our My Guide service, where we partner a vision impaired person who finds it difficult to get out and about on their own. We partner them with a guide, we train you, and we talk to you about things like language and how you can build your confidence about explaining things and, you know, bringing somebody's world more alive by the use of our wonderful English language.
Or Welsh, perhaps?
Definitely.
The sort of notion of emojis in Wales is a different line entirely.
Look, I said that leaves me shivery. Now, in Welsh, that would really leave me...
It would be challenging.
Frozen.
Exactly. Dave, it's been awesome sharing some of the good thoughts with your good self. I still think you could do a wonderful and very effective Susie Dent impersonation if you wish. You know, it's just a line on that basis, but we'll work on that.
I think I'll forego that. I'll spare your listeners that... this time of the day.
An absolute delight, Dave Kent, Guide Dogs Engagement Officer. Many thanks indeed, and I'm sure we'll speak again very soon. Take care now.
Thank you very much indeed. Bye-bye.
I wonder if anybody is paying attention to lyrics, because this song is just, or was it George Harrison singing Got My Mind Set on You? Just goes to show lyricists can have lots of fun. That was Weird Al Yankovic taking us out of the word scenario there, which I think at least sets a whole new scene and brings us neatly round to drivers. Now, Rory, are you driving yet? Are you taking your exams, tests, etc.? As a case of no, I don't believe in that. I use Shank's pony.
I did a whole bunch of lessons last year. Unfortunately, failed my test, and since going to uni, it's been very patchy when I can actually have lessons.
We might find out some of the rationales in terms of why you were unsuccessful. It may have something to do with the parents. I won't say anything else at this stage because we've got Quentin Wilson, broadcaster and motoring expert, to address that sort of issue. Hopefully, Rory, he'll provide some help for you.
Famous, a star of the screen, but you can do something in
And the question, Rory, is, as you were unsuccessful in getting your test last year, could it have been the fault of the parents? Well, somebody who can address this is broadcaster and motoring expert extraordinaire, the awesome Quentin Wilson. How are you, Quentin?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, in the last calendar year, 1.66 million practical driving tests taken, of which only less than half were actually successful. 54% of young drivers have been given tuition from their parents. Rory, were you given tuition by your parents?
Not before I took my test, though. And my driving instructor did say that it's a very, very useful thing.
Well, clearly, you need a copy of Learn to Drive Without Tears and Tantrums. I clearly say that because Quentin Wilson always writes quality books. But, Quentin, you've heard Rory's little tale there. How can you help him?
Well, it's interesting that you didn't have parental driving lessons, because they are obviously much cheaper than driving only with an ADI. And I'm not saying you shouldn't have parental driving lessons, but what I'm saying is that if your parents are teaching you to drive, then you've got to make sure your parents know what they're doing, because instructors are trained, parents aren't. And they've probably taken their driving test decades ago, never looked at a highway code or a driving manual, and never sat in the back of a car during a driving lesson. So their messaging may be very different from the ADI, the approved driving instructor. So you've got to make sure that they're talking to each other and are on the same page. Otherwise, you get confused, confidence goes away, you have rows, you get shouty, and that's not going to help at all. So I'm saying let's teach our parents, who are teaching us to drive better.
Teach the parents first. That's good. There's no truth in the rumour that your parents actually still use hand signals to actually demonstrate turns, is there? Sorry.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Well, I mean, Quentin, do we still need to know about hand signals? I mean, that was a sort of a wonderful thing where, you know, the notion of sticking your hand out and indicating left or right, etc. Oh, the halcyon days. Maybe we should never actually got rid of the chap with the red flag.
With the red flag, yeah, I know,
Precisely. But let's progress on from that, because as we head through the century, we've got the option of electric vehicles, driverless vehicles, and so on. What are your thoughts on that, Quentin? I mean, you know, we heard recently that by 2030, everything's going to be an electric vehicle. They'll just be cars which are all electric cars.
Yeah, I mean, I think the government's got to be very careful they don't raise people's expectations beyond the reality. I've been driving electric cars now for 7 years. I've got a Nissan Leaf at the moment. I've got a Tesla Model 3 on order. They are great. They are coming. They are absolutely what the future is going to look like. And we point past the critical mass stage. And I drove a Tesla the last week, 230 miles down to London, and still with 70 miles left in the battery, so a viable range of 350 miles. That's enough. That means you can have that car as your only car. The trouble is, it's 50 grand or 40, 45 for the smaller one. So we need to get the price of the smaller cars down, so you can buy a viable electric car with a 250 mile range for 20 grand, 15 grand, and that's going to be the thing that's going to take the time.
But let's move back to Learn to Drive Without Tears and Tantrums, because that is essential. And again, a little quick confession here, Quentin, I don't have any children, but this year, the first time, I have finally invested in a GPS satellite navigation system. I wondered what my life was like before. Actually, I had it. It's become my new best friend in so many ways.
Wow.
So
how long have you been driving without sat nav?
Pretty much since the days it was passed back in the mid-80s, really. So it's, you know, maps and various other bits and pieces, but it was still there. But my point being that things like parking sensors, other sort of issues, these are the kind of things which your parents might not be familiar with, and they think, well, actually, you know, it's that the added technology. I mean, and, you know, now, of course, and this is all the reasons, the sat-nav is part of the driving test, etc. You need to work on that basis.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to know how to use it, and some parents may not even be aware of how it works, or even that you can get Google Maps on your phone and use that.
Exactly.
So, look, the point is, the whole game has changed, hasn't it? I mean, since we learned to drive, the roads have become much more congested, much more difficult, and the tech in the cars is different. And even the way they teach you, and you don't have to cross your hands over now, and you know, going up and down the gears, you don't have to do that. So it's a very different world from when we learnt to drive, and we've got to get up to speed if we're teaching our team to drive.
No pun intended, obviously.
I was about to say.
Perfect. You see, that's why, not just a great motoring journalist, but a great critic as well from that point of view, wordsmith. Rory, has this helped at all? Will you be rushing out to at least get your parents a copy of Learn to Drive Without Tears and Tantrums?
Well, here's the thing. Instead of my dad having the problem of, oh, there's too much new technology now that, you know, he's not keeping up with it, he has the opposite problem. He just buys cars with a ridiculous amount of technology that basically do the driving for him.
Wow.
And of course, that has the opposite problem of becoming too lax or thinking, or, you know, not. Or getting too used to
Quentin,
the modern technology.
Another challenge there. Too much technology. How are we going to cope with that?
And so, yeah. Well, go on, Quentin.
It's interesting you say that, Rory, because, you know, this vision everybody has that we'll be being driven around in autonomous cars within, you know, 5 years, it's nonsense. I mean, I think, you know, most people involved in the autonomous car sector now say it'll be 15 to 20, mate, before we see that level of autonomy on roads. So, and the idea that we're going to give up the skills of driving completely and just sit back smugly in the back seat, looking at our iPad while the algorithm takes us to work, I'm not sure I find that a great vision. Do you?
And then, of course, the notion of wake up, you've fallen asleep before you actually have a crash, which is not going to help. You know, much as I appreciate my satellite navigation voice, I think, you know, I still need to work our way through this. Very important.
But you have the voice on as well.
Oh, yes.
You are old school.
Yes. I feel as though it's a companion in many ways, Quentin. You know, the journey's
you
up and down.
You need to get out more, you know that, don't you?
Quentin, that has been said for about a year, but still, what the hey. Youngdriver.com is presumably the best place to go to find out further details about what we've been discussing today.
That's it. You just go to the youngdriver.com site, click on the book link, and it's $9.99 plus post and packing, and I will even sign it for you.
Wow. I mean, learn to drive without tears and tantrums. A guide for parents and teens to help manage that often difficult relationship between learner, advanced driving instructor, ADI instructor, and, of course, mum and dad. I think actually, Rory, we should put you through this basically so you actually see how this can actually help. You might be, you could be our sort of guinea pig from this basis. Would you be up for that?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Not sounding too enthusiastic, Quentin, but I'm sure we can work on
that. It's the early morning.
It's,
it is the early morning, but also we need to have a deal that when I next talk to you, you've switched the voice off on your sat nav.
Whoa. You know those last two questions. Quentin, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
We have, absolutely. It's great.
And given that you've already started putting in the rejoinders on the riders, will you be kind enough to join us again in the very near future?
Would be my pleasure. Look forward to it.
Yay!
On the other side of the street I knew stood a girl that looked like you. I guess that's deja vu, but I thought this can't be true, cause you moved to West LA or New York or Santa Fe or wherever to get away from me. Can't be true, cause
oh, I swear to you, I'll be there for you.
your favourite sound, Rory?
Sound?
Sound, yes, exactly. What's the favourite sound that you can think of? I mean, is it a case of the opening bars of Welcome to the Midweek Drive Morning Edition? Or what ultimately sort of says, yes, what's the sound that you think, yeah, this is the sound I'd like to capture?
Mm, that's a really good question.
Sound of silence, maybe?
Silence can be good, actually. Like mourning birds, like that kind of really cliche sort of sound. Mm.
The reason we're putting this to you, obviously an ideal thing for radio, is because Nick Chrysos, who will be joining us shortly, Director of Innovation at Cisco, is looking for people to actually collate their various sounds, which range currently from Scottish sea farms to wind farms, vroom, 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 and sounds of the island. Bumblebees are actually there. Bagpipes are there. All music as diverse as Britain itself, which all sounds. So has that helped sort of focus the notion of sounds in any way, shape or form in terms of this is what I would actually take in terms of sounds?
Yeah, it would probably be something or like a good like seaside waves lapping sound, like the chhh that comes through. Yeah. Oh, that'd be good.
Here was I thinking you might have actually gone for wah, as in ducks.
As in quack.
Clearly no. That's all gone. That's all gone completely. Anyway, we'll find out what this creative process with 5G Rural First Consortium is all about after Dean Friedman.
Let me tell you a story of bravery and glory, a tale that's both true and surprising. About a muddle in the middle of a puddle in Dublin, in the week of the Easter Rising, in the week of the Easter Rising. It was 1916 in St. Stephen's Green, when the Irish Citizens' Army was defending the square from the British troops there. Fighting grew savage and stormy, the fighting grew savage and stormy. For the bullets were flying and soldiers were dying, when a gamekeeper name of James Kearney said, I'd rather retreat, but my ducks have to eat. They've no knowledge of freedom or tyranny. They've no knowledge of freedom or tyranny. Then he took a bold stand, a white flag in his hand. Hold your fire, he shouted and pled. And then to his surprise, both sides heeded his cries as his ducks waddled over to get fed. As his ducks waddled over to get fed. There were mallards and muscovies, cresteds and blues. There were harlequins, pintails and widgeons. There were wingnets and beacons and buffleheads too. And a handful of seagulls and pigeons. Just a handful of seagulls and pigeons. And then each afternoon, every squad and platoon held their fire. Laid down their arms. As the gamekeeper tended his ducklings and ducks, not a feather on their heads do they harm. Not a feather on their heads do they harm. So step left, step right, my fine feathered friends, and let your webbed feet guide you. Make haste as you waddle and flap, as you paddle and quack. There's a war being waged beside you. There's a war being waged beside you.
You know, sometimes, Rory, you get to the stage where you think when people... Yeah, there they are. Forget it. Shh. Ducks crossing. Ducks crossing. And if you were listening to last week's Midweek Drive, the author of that song and the writer Dean Friedman will explain all about how he actually based it on a true story of how war and fighting was stopped in the Easter Rising zones in Stephen's Green in Dublin to actually allow the ducks to actually cross over safely. Quite right, too. I thought it was wonderful. Yeah. That's great. They're there. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, marvellous stuff. We will hopefully be speaking to, as mentioned, Nick Chrysos, Director of Innovation at Cisco, who is keen on finding out what our favourite sounds are, but maybe he's forgotten the sound of the telephone. Maybe he hasn't. We'll work our way through that as the programme proceeds. Time now for this.
But even when it hurts, together we can learn to break the silence. So live life in our lives. Stand up, be done, God. Don't be a fill of love. This time we've had enough. And even if it hurts, together we can break the silence.
Oh, well, Rory, obviously we're not destined to connect with our 5G expert.
Ironic, not there yet.
Ironic if he's on 5G. Never mind. It was Director of Innovation, Cisco. We've tried various numbers. We've even been contacted by the studio, and we've had a challenge. That's the behind the scenes. I know the listener isn't really interested in that, but what the hey. Upcoming Stoptober will be emerging amongst us, and we'll find out about that, plus a few other bits and pieces. Plus, we might just be able to squeeze in a little hint of a piece we actually did a matter of hours ago with one of the winners of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
What does the future sound like? What does the future sound like? What does the future sound like? What does the future sound like?
The future will be silent.
Home buying, the range of challenges that are actually there with respect to the whole experience can grow almost ad infinitum, it would seem. New research revealing that nearly 6 in 10 aspiring homeowners think that they would be able to borrow up to 10 times their income for their mortgage, with 3 in 5 think exchange is when you hand over keys on moving day, and 43% actually expect to get any fees already paid refunded if a chain collapses. No, no, and no. And who better to actually address some of the challenges here than two sensational individuals. First of all, the winner of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and star of Made in Chelsea, of course, the fabulous Georgia Tofolo. How are you, Georgia?
Hello. Very well, very well.
Excellent. And we've also got the almost equally fabulous head of mortgages at Santander, Graham Seller. How are you, Graham?
I'm very well, thank you.
Quite right.
Wonderful. Georgia, share with us your thoughts on this particular series of myths and preconceptions and challenges with respect to, you know, what's revealed by this research when it comes to buying a home.
Yeah, so this research is quite poignant for me in particular, because I was fortunate enough to buy my first home last year. And I found the whole experience, it was quite emotional for me because I was very excited. But gosh, in hindsight, there was so much that I didn't know. And I did go into it blind, because I'm sure lots of other first-time buyers felt the same. But the legals around it, the admin, the stamp duty, for me it was very, very overwhelming, and I really, really connected to some of this research. I know for some people who've bought homes before, they might think, you know, someone thinking that you actually get the keys on exchange day is silly, but for someone who hasn't done it before, it's not that silly.
That's very true. I mean, Graham, is this a case of financially we desperately need some education? It should start in schools. We should actually start addressing it. We should start with interviews like this and then acknowledge that these kind of misconceptions and lines that initially you might sort of think, oh, yes, etc. Of course, we never make that mistake. But we begin to address them and shine some more light on them.
Absolutely. I mean, we talk a lot about affordability. Can you afford to buy your first home, and deposits, and how you save for your first home? But no one really sort of takes the time to explain to people a couple of years before even thinking about buying your own home, what is it? It's a legal minefield. And, just, you know, as George has just said there, it's 16, 17 weeks from the time you put your offer in until you complete. So it's a long time to be trying to get through the process. So education is what we believe is needed, and what the research is showing. Some of the statistics you've just called out, there are some things where people just don't know what's going to happen. For me, one that jumps out to this, quarter of people believe they're going to get their deposit back after the first year, and that clearly isn't true.
Mm. Georgia, I mean, from your own perspective, did you have any advice? Was it a case of, no, you're going to dive in, you're going to do it all yourself, etc., being an independent young lady? After all, you've won I'm a Celebrity, it's got to work. Or was it a case of, oh, I don't know where we're going with this?
Yeah, it's interesting. I think it goes back to actually what you just said. I'm fiercely independent. I don't like listening to people, and I just went in for it. And I remember I got a mortgage offer through, and I was so thrilled with it. I couldn't believe that anyone even wanted to lend me money. And I just took it. And I wish that I'd have, you know, gone to a bank or gone to anyone, friend or family, for advice. Because actually, it's so important you shop around for these things. You know, it's the biggest purchase of your whole life. You've got to get it right.
And Graham, presumably you'd echo the notion that you need to actually sort of compare the market, quite literally, not on various other websites, but actually look and see what sort of roles and things are actually out there to really get the best deal which is appropriate for yourself.
Absolutely. And what we've done, we're running these events in our branch network, and it's aimed at people that haven't bought a property before. They're not Santander-related, they're buying your first home-related.
And quite rightly so, too. And that's where we leave Georgia Toffolo and Santander in terms of moving on to what we had hoped would be taking place and is taking place. We got faith, and it has actually happened. We can talk about the strange and mysterious wonderment of sounds, etc., with the Director of Innovation at Cisco. It's a wonderful Nick Chrysos. How are you, Nick?
I'm fine. Good morning.
Good. I'm glad we managed to connect together. Now, we've been sharing in the studio some of our own favourite sounds, but talk to us about this wonderful work that Erland Cooper has actually created in terms of creating sounds from the Orkney Islands and how it fits in with your own Director of Innovation work and so on to oversee this work.
Well, this is part of the project called 5-0 First. And 5-0 First is a project that really looks into deploying 5G in rural areas. It's a project that started almost 2 years ago. It covers Somerset, Shropshire, and, of course, the Orkney Islands. And we are in the second phase now. And in the second phase, always we wanted really to bring it closer to people and show to people not only what the technology can do, but what is going to be the impact in their lives. The music, the song, the tapestry is actually a very good way of engaging people. We used sounds from Orkney Islands based on the 5G infrastructure that we put there. We asked people also to participate by providing their own favorite sounds. And then Erland Cooper to put everything together. So a single piece of music almost demonstrates the power of the technology and the community participation at the same time.
We've spoken already this morning with visually impaired souls about the importance of images and mind views and so on. And that sort of capturing of life really ties into a whole range of factors, but you have raised something there, Nick, which is critical to all rural areas, which is many people actually say when they're living in places as wide-ranging as the Orkneys and so on, that, you know, we can't get the technology to work here. Clearly what you're saying is you can, and it is.
It is. The whole project is based on putting the business case, the reasoning behind why we should deploy this kind of technology in rural areas. We're looking into the local industry. We're looking into creating efficiency, productivity, and as a byproduct, provide this kind of connectivity for the rural communities, really bridging this digital divide. The target of the project is to show impact by providing the same technology that we have in the cities today.
Now, without going into the whole notion of surveillance and various other aspects, and I know Rory, who's in the studio, is keen to actually raise one or two issues with respect to this, I was intrigued by what happened in the Scarna Brae prehistoric village, in which you had mics listening as Orkney welcomed thousands of tourists this summer, benefiting from 5G connectivity on tour buses, enabling passengers to access dynamic content and so on. Is there something where you have to put a disclaimer out here? I mean, are we talking about, you know, challenges or people actually don't want to be overheard, etc.? Or is this a case of, no, welcome to the 21st century, this is 5G, get used to it?
No. I mean we do try to be as compliant as possible with, you know, not exposing anybody's privacy in through these songs. But what we are demonstrating there is really, it's a brilliant use case. We have Orkney Islands with 20,000 people altogether, receiving more than 400,000 visitors a year, and you know, it's suddenly this technology can enable tourists to go in places they've never been before. It enables people to really get information about the islands that it was impossible to do without this technology. So it is part of the song. We wanted to make it part of what is happening in this area, but at the same time showcase what the technology can do for the tourism in the area in the future.
Okay, Rory, you've had a listen to that. You've had a look at the release here. You're obviously looking at erlandcooper.com/home for the website. Any thoughts or questions you'd like to put to Nico?
Well, I think it's actually quite a great project that you've got here, Nick. because oftentimes when you see all of these new announcements of all these new technologies, whether and they're usually taking place in America or on big stages, oftentimes rural communities can feel quite isolated. Because obviously when they announce that kind of thing, they're immediately thinking, right, we want it in all the biggest cities in the world, we're going to roll it out because that's really where the money is. But something, you know, much smaller or in more rural communities, getting 5G there to actually connect them better is a fantastic idea. I just want to know, where did you come up with the idea for making a song out of just sounds that they like?
It's not the first time, I have to say. You know, I've been leading, we have been leading a number of projects from smart cities to autonomous vehicles. It's not the first time that we thought of art as a way of bringing the community closer. We have done this in the past with major artworks in the center of the city. We always think that it's a brilliant way of taking participation. We like to call it, in the technical terms, knowledge dissemination. Pretty much we try to find ways of informing people what is happening in their community, what's happening in their area. Art and music specifically is one of the best ways to really engage people. So if you see it as a method, as not so much as a way of proving the technology, but as a way of engaging the community, it's one of the best ways to do it.
We would certainly endorse that, and Nick, I'm delighted we managed to touch base with your good self. We gave a web address earlier. Is that the best way to actually find out further details for our listeners, to go to erlandcooper.com?
Also the 5GRL1st.org is the project's website,
and
you can find more details about the technical details.
Nick Christos, Director of Innovation at Cisco, many thanks indeed. I'm glad we got through in the end, because I think it was well worthwhile, and I trust we'll speak again soon. Take care now.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
And as we move from the Orkney Islands and the Shetlands and sounds and vision from that point of view, we move to an even more interesting aspect from the joys of good news, in which recent research has suggested that we are heading for the fastest drop in smoking rates in over a decade. Now, Rory, I trust the answer to this is no, but do you or have you ever smoked?
I have not.
Oh, we are. You see, I don't join you in that. There were 200 fewer smokers every hour in England in 2019, according to early indications. And the best person to actually talk about this, as far as Public Health England is concerned, is, of course, the tobacco control lead for the aforementioned PHE. That's Martin Dockrell. How are you, Martin?
I'm very well. How are you?
Delighted to touch base with your good self again. And I have to say, very impressed, Martin, that with only about, I think, 10 seconds of the David Bowie track, not only did you identify the year, but the actual, you know, that it was there. It's awesome. It's fantastic. Very good, Martin.
It was the Low album, if I recall correctly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so straight in there in any way, shape or form. If it was a musical quiz, you would be well ahead. But let's move on to this particular aspect in terms of the research. I mean, is that the general thing that, you know, finally we're getting to the stage of almost becoming a smoke-free country, a tobacco-free country, at least in terms of this habit, which was introduced, of course, back in the Elizabethan times and so on?
Yeah, and back in the days of, you know, 1977, when David Bowie was releasing Low, yeah. I joined the 40-something percent of adults who, I wasn't even an adult at the time, I was 15, yeah. You know, but about 4 out of 10 adults were smoking cigarettes every day back then.
Yeah.
And now it's tumbled to, what, about 15%? It's really transformed. And fewer and fewer kids are starting, more and more adults are quitting. It's great news.
Which, again, we can only echo from that point of view. So, Stoptober is clearly approaching. Is this something which, again, I mean, can we look forward to a time, I don't know, mid-20s, when we can actually turn around and say we no longer need Stoptober, or will you use it to another routine for me? Because it certainly seems to be doing its job.
Well, yes. So we've had a kind of approach where sometimes we do the kind of hard-hitting health harms messages, you know. It's different people's resolve. You know, dad died of cancer, mum had a heart attack, I don't want that to happen to me. Mm. And that kind of thing. That works for some people. But Stoptober has always been a kind of more fun, let's do it together, you know, we can do this together kind of thing. And we've produced some ads on our Facebook page, not on television this year, but on our Facebook page and on our website. So Stoptober, if you search for Stoptober, you'll find it. And they're kind of fun, and they're all about breaking up with smoking. And then you go onto the website, and it gives you all sorts of help, including our little ask you a few questions, and then gives you personalized quit advice on the basis of your profile. So look, it's never been easier, it's never been more fun, there have never been more people quitting. Let's all do it now.
Rory, go a stage further. You've never smoked, and you don't smoke now, which is great. Parents, did they ever smoke at all?
No, they didn't. Funnily enough, my dad tried a cigarette when he was 14 and immediately kind of felt quite ill after doing so, and I had kind of the same reaction.
And
so
it's never something which actually helps from that point of view. No. Looking at the overall regional smoking prevalence, Martin, it seems as though ballpark, it's the northeast that's still up there, and of course Yorkshire and the Humber with 16.7% from that point of view. The rest of the country is pretty much on 13-14% and so on. There is that kind of connection, which I think is a little bit spurious, but it does connect the areas of depravity or sort of health and wealth distribution is kind of connecting, that actually is that something which within Public Health England you are conscious about, that somehow there's a bit
certainly true. There's a big health inequalities impact on smoking, and so, you know, the smoking used to be pitched as a glamorous stuff that, you know, sophisticated people did in dinner jackets. The truth is it's increasingly something that's confined to some of our more disadvantaged communities, and more disadvantaged communities smoke the most. I've got to say, it is true that in the Northeast they still have the highest rates, but they have the fastest falling rates. Mm. So things are going really well in the Northeast, and it won't be long at this rate before they catch up and overtake London. Yeah. So great, well done, the Geordies.
Absolutely. Although clearly I can understand Ian Lennox and various other sort of Geordie people would say, well, you're only a Geordie if you're in the fog of the Tyne, man. That's that you're born within the snow and the Tyne, you know.
That's true. The Maccas as well. There's a whole bunch of
Geordies. Yeah, precisely.
And they're all doing really well at quitting smoking, which is, you know, fantastic, because when you're in a community where, you know, everybody else seems to smoke, your mates still smoke, your mum and dad, your brothers and sisters, you get a false impression that smoking is still the norm. But if you can kind of peek over the fence and see what's happening beyond your immediate circle of friends, you see that, you know, in other neighborhoods, in other families, people are giving up really, really fast. Don't get left behind. Don't have your family left behind. You can have all the same benefits of feeling better, tasting better, smelling better, having more of cash in your pocket. Cash in pocket, also 1977, I think. But all sorts of benefits to quitting, and there's no reason why you and your family aren't as entitled to them as everybody else.
Brilliant. I was always thinking brass in pocket there with the Pretenders, but let's not go there. It's a different line.
Yes.
Martin Dockrell, Tobacco Control Lead for PHE. Many thanks. Finally, Martin, where can people go to online to find out further details about what we've been chatting about today, and people who might still know people or just thinking, yeah, I want to find out more details. Would it just be a case of going to the Public Health England website?
Search Stoptober in your favourite search engine, or go to our Facebook page, Stoptober in Facebook.
Martin Dockrell, Tobacco Control Lead for PHE. Many thanks indeed. Take care now. Whether he would actually identify that, I'm sure he would. Smokey Robinson and the Miracles, Tears of a Clown. Okay. The tears of a clown, when there's no one around. Still probably prefer the Ducks. Big thanks to Rory McGowan for actually doing the full 2 hours of the show. Well done, Rory.
That's quite all right.
And obviously to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Ian Lennox, Caroline Ray, Dave Kent, Quentin Wilson, Nick Chrysos, Georgia Toff, and Martin Dockrell, and you, dear listener, for being with us for the however long you've been part of it. You can always listen to the whole programme. It's available for download very soon. Don't forget Sound of Nick's Vision later on this evening, plus great stuff on Siren all through the day. It's 1 minute to 10 a.m. in Britain. It's astounding. We've got a little smidgen of Carly Rae Jepsen to take us up to the news, and then we're out of here. Say happy waddling, Rory.
Okay.
Happy waddling.